Welcome to Awakenings Movement Podcast. Awakenings Movement is a community where dreamers become believers and believers become doers.
While I was pregnant and through my birth process, afterwards, postpartum depression, you know, that's very common, that's very natural. And for me, my postpartum depression set in as a fixation of my mind on everything that had been done wrong to me from birth. And as I was at home with my child, the things that I couldn't do, the things that I did not have, the things that I could not give her were a result of the previous 32 years of just being done wrong by people in my mind. Y'all feel me? I had anxiety. I had some dark inner thoughts, and I just was generally unhappy and then felt bad for being unhappy because, you know, some people can't have children and some people don't have a wonderful husband and some people don't have a home. And so my inner critic would remind me of all the reasons why I should be happy and how I was horrible for not being happy, which sent me further down the spiral, right? I had to admit that I was in some trouble because I became this container of every wrong that had been done to me. And occasionally I would catch a glimpse of like how it has worked out for my good. And occasionally I would catch a glimpse of the gratitude that and the joy that was before me. And I would hold on to and then just like struggle and then let go of all of the present moments that I had to be thankful for. And I was able to create a facade of happiness and righteous, holy, you know, gratitude and joy so that I did not put forth a bad example. I didn't want to be a bad Christian, you know, so I was just, oh. And at home I was, you know. So, and even from Devon, Devon is so happy. Y'all know my husband. If you're Victor, Liz, y'all need to meet my husband because he's so happy and so positive. And he has this inner ability to like nurture himself. And so, you know, some knock him down, he'd be like, oh, look at that. All right. You know, like Devon could be shot and he'd be like, I'm all right, girl. Okay, come on, let's go. Devon, you're bleeding. It's okay, let's just let's watch something before we go to the hospital. Like, let's watch that. She's gotta have it real quick. Like, that's how he is. He's like, he bounces back very quickly. But, you know, are we good? Okay. Go back to the very beginning of the slide, though. I'm not that good at expressing, but I'm very good at repressing my anger. I'm very good at repressing my emotions. But don't you know that when you repress one emotion, you actually repress how many of the emotions? All of the emotions. When you repress and you bury one sensation, you actually turn off the body's ability to feel any of the sensations. And so I struggled. I'm learning again how to cry. Like, I still am like, whenever I get like a lump in my throat, I'm like, I'm feeling things, you know. And it's still a struggle for me to actually let that lump like rise and let the tears fall down my face because I'm extremely good at repressing and swallowing and burying the things that I feel, which is not useful when it comes to being a mother because you can't repress your emotions when you have a little person who is so tuned into how you feel that even at 2 years old, she asks questions like, mommy, you sick? Mommy, you okay? You know? And she's at this point understanding herself through my emotions. So she's learning who she is through how mommy reacts and responds to her. So I have to tackle her and roll in a hug, you know, and I have to cry in front of her and I have to emote to her. And, you know, just as important or even more, I have to do that for myself, right? And so in 2015, I went to a retreat called the Gravity retreat. It was called the Grounding Retreat. And I remember writing in my journal at that retreat that I was so angry and just so mad. I was mad at everybody. I was mad at, like, gosh, just you name it, mad, you know. And so I wrote in my journal, I don't know what, I'm just so angry and resentful. I don't know how to let it go. I don't know how to, like, I understand, like, that there is a point where I'm supposed to be, like, letting this go. And I understand what forgiveness, like, is defined as, right? And I understand, like, what is on the other side, but I don't know how to, like, I can't get there. Like, I can see that part of that floor over there. I can see the, you know, the seats, but I don't know how to, I don't know what steps or what path to get there. And at this retreat, that's where I discovered the Enneagram. And so you guys, some of you guys know that I'm, like, studying the Enneagram now, which for those of you who don't know, the Enneagram is a tool designed to help us to process our stories and our personalities and to discover what childhood trauma has inspired certain behaviors that have become habitual tendencies to avoid that trauma that is the whole of our personality, and then how to kind of transcend that or rise above that and get in touch with who we authentically are. And so the Enneagram is a psycho-spiritual tool that has to engage psychology, spirituality, and some emotional work to be able to do that. And it's been, I mean, it's really too useful. It's great. It's amazing. Enneagram, Enneagram, Latin, I mean Greek, Ennea means nine, which there are nine dominant personality types, and then gram means symbol or image, like Instagram. So it's called the Enneagram of personality types. And it's funny because I keep saying that I'm studying this. I got another scholarship to study and become a master Enneagram consultant. And so I study in like public places, and when I have phone conversations, y'all know that people are forcing me to consult. Three strangers have overheard my conversations, and as soon as I hung up, been like, I need an appointment. I need to sit down with you now. Yeah, so it's interesting because I'm like, okay, I'm free on Thursday. Stranger, how you doing? And all of these strangers are doing amazing work. Wait till y'all, man, woo! Okay, God is real. God is real. I know we at church and stuff, but I just want y'all to know God is real. So anyway, in the back of one of my textbooks is this tool called the Enneagram of Letting Go. And it doesn't have to do with the personality types at all. It just uses the symbol, Ennea, nine, gram, symbol. It just uses 9 points to give you 9 steps to actually move through something that you're experiencing and come out of the other side of it more aware and more relaxed and more present, right? And so I want to share that tool with y'all. Are y'all interested in a tool like that? Oh, yeah, me too. Okay, so go back to the first scripture. Go to the first slide, y'all. Can y'all go back to the first slide? Huh? Oh, good, okay. So this is Romans chapter 8, starting with verse 18. Daniel, my resident James Earl Jones, and Denzel. He's James Earl Jones by the voice, and he's Denzel by the face. Like, you know. So can you, No. Brother, listen. Okay. Listen. Come on now. You got the bald head. You got the chocolate. Come on now. Okay, so can you?
That's why I don't think there's any comparison between the present hard times and the coming good times. The created world itself can hardly wait for what's coming next. Everything in creation is being more or less held back. God reigns it in until both creation and all the creatures are ready and can be released at the same moment into the glorious times ahead. Meanwhile, the joyful anticipation deepens. All around us, we observe a pregnant creation. The difficult times of pain throughout the world are simply birth pangs, but it's not only around us, it's within us. The Spirit of God is arousing us within. We're also feeling the birth pangs. These sterile and barren bodies of ours are yearning for full deliverance. That is why waiting does not diminish us any more than waiting diminishes a pregnant mother. We are enlarged in the waiting. We, of course, don't see what is enlarging us, but the longer we wait, the larger we become, and the more joyful our expectancy. Meanwhile, the moment we get tired of in the waiting, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. If we don't know how or what to pray, it doesn't matter. He does our praying in and for us, making prayer out of our wordless sighs, our aching groans. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition, and keeps us present before God. That's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 28.
So let's read this last slide together. Ready, go.
That's why we can be
so sure that every detail in our lives
of love for God is working to something good.
But how do we go from grown to good? Because I think that we've all experienced those wordless sighs, just like, ugh. I think we've all experienced the groans. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody that you just couldn't organize your emotions well enough to get into words, so you're just like, ah! Nobody? Just these people over here? Oh, okay. Oh, good, okay. Oh, my mama's husband's in the room. I'm her daughter, so I know we got the same communication screen. got that genetically. So there's a way to go from experience these groans to that expectancy of that good. But y'all know scripture is literal. Like the releasing and the enlarging and the pain and the movement and the sensation in our bodies. Y'all, that's a real thing. Some of us are so used to ignoring, denying, and repressing those sensations that we're not quite present to them. And then some of us are so aware of them that they freak us out and we respond to them on other people, right? But this is not just like beautiful poetry that Paul was like writing to just kind of encourage people through a beautiful letter. This was really happening in Paul's body. This was really happening in human experience. There was real anguish and real pain and real loss and real rejection coming alongside this irrational optimism that there is this God that is going to work things out for this good life that we all yearn for. The optimism and the actual perceptual anguish are existing in the same bodies. And this particular passage is designed to not only acknowledge what we're experiencing, but give us a vision of the future to hold on to that will pull us through those painful, anxiety-filled, angst-ridden moments. And if you don't have those anxiety-filled, angst-ridden moments, God bless you. What prescription are you taking? Because unless you're self-medicating, we are all feeling these things. And this time of year is like a magnifying glass on what we don't have, who we don't have, who's left us, what we're not able to do. This time of year is like a telescope for families to see just how dysfunctional it's like a microscope and a telescope, you know what I mean? Like you see the big picture of how dysfunctional some families are, and then you can see like the little bitty like nuance, the little details of dysfunction, the expectations, the limitations that we put on ourselves and other folks. And so I have a tool that I want us to engage in to go from this kind of groan to the good that is promised. How are we feeling? Is the temperature a little warmer? It feels warmer to me. I'm going to take my jacket off. So this is going to move in three movements. The first movement is going to be work that we're going to do in ourselves. The second movement, we're going to talk to each other. And the third movement, we're going to talk as a group. Okay? Okay. So no work can begin until we get present to what we're feeling. And don't be like me. I'm fine. Everything's okay. I'm fine. It's good. It's all good. It's fine. And on the inside, I'm like, I'm mad, right? At everybody. But on the outside, I'm good, it's good, it's fine, God is good, okay. Mm-hmm. So I want you to get present right now. Just think of one experience, conversation, moment that you've had recently that has just been staying with you, like you just can't let it go. And it may not be recent, it may be old. The older the better, actually, because I want us to really leave some stuff here today. So if you got something going on that is an old story that you just can't quite let go of, you know. For example, one of the things that I've used to work through is I had a series of terrible relationships, terrible romantic relationships. And I just kept attracting people who would not participate financially in the relationship. And I was mad about that for a long time. Like, mad at them, right? Mad at myself for agreeing to dynamics that created a toxic codependent situation, right? And then mad at, like, my community for not, like, shaking me and, like, punching me and slapping me and being like, break up with him, even though a lot of folks did say, like, that's not the one, you know? I was like, you're wrong. You don't know what God has for me, you know? I'm going to go buy us groceries. and there's nothing wrong with buying groceries for your man, but, I mean, talk about it. That's all I'm saying is talk about what's going on. So I had a lot of anxiety and a lot of anger around some of those past relationships, and so I used this tool. All right, so the first thing you got to do is get present. Everybody got your little situation? Your situation? Everybody got it? So now that you're present to that negative feeling or that negative experience that you're holding, that negative experience that may be your source of information about present experiences, that negative experience that may be your source of power over that person, right? Just see it. That's the first thing we have to do. And what do you notice? And do you guys have pens? Rebecca, are the pens here too?
Yeah.
Anybody need a pen? Because you might need to write, like, process. So just see it. And raise your hand if you need a pen. But just start thinking, what have we noticed that has alerted us to a need to do this work? Like, if that resonated with you earlier, like, do you need help getting across the threshold of, like, releasing these experiences? Like, what have you noticed? This could be a reaction, like an overreaction to something. This could be a viewpoint. All blanks are blanks, you know? Certain songs that you listen to that just, like, run this narrative on a loop, you know what I'm saying? There was a certain Big Sean song that I couldn't stop playing. I can only say the letters, IDFWU, and that was, like, my jam, and I was like, why am I, like, why is my car shaking? Like, I'm dancing so hard to this song. And it's because that song was, like, fueling, and it was helping me to, like, be righteous in my anger. A painful feeling. Do you feel pain? Like, or has there been an abrupt shift in any relationship that you can trace back to this experience or this negative view, right? Now, the next part of this movement is to say it. Like, what words can you use? And this is without judgment. This is a no judgment zone. No judgment zone, okay? Can you name the state that you feel? Like, I'm angry. I am enraged. I am bored. I'm lonely. I'm blank. What is the state you can feel? And this is why this work is just you writing on this sheet in the silence. Because there's no judgment. You don't have to worry about how you look or how it sounds to anybody, including yourself. But you gotta say what that feeling is. Give it a name. Name that state. And then the third part of this first movement is just to sense it. And by sense it, I mean take a scan of your body. And when you think about this experience or this situation or this state that you're in. What happens in your body? Sometimes it feels like I'm on a roller coaster. My stomach drops. Other times there's like a knot, a painful knot, like in between my shoulders when I'm holding on to stress. Or my jaw is just sore from clenching it, and I didn't even realize I was clenching it, right? So take a minute to notice what sensation this feeling is creating in the body. This is that Romans 30-something, the groans and the wordless sighs. This is the manifestation of that. This is exactly what Paul was writing about, the sensations that our angst creates in our bodies, okay? Y'all got that? Got it? Okay. So now stay with it. Don't back off of it. Stay with what you see. Stay with the state, the name that you gave the state, and stay with that sensation in your body. Like right now I'm feeling nervous because I don't want this little experience to fall apart, right? And then I just trip, see? So now I'm feeling like, oh, Lord. So stay with it. Don't back out of it. Don't do the automatic thing of like, no, I'm just going to like put this paper down and just kind of, right? Staying present to the words we've given, to what we feel, and where we feel it, start to think about the underlying emotions having to do with the situation or experience. Like, what do you think the emotions connected to the experience are, right? Like, what is the emotion connected to how your body feels? Do you feel a little more relaxed talking about this? And so that's the next phase on the Enneagram of letting go is relaxation. Like, there's a connection between exploring what's happening and your body immediately begins to release. Almost as automatically as your breath and automatically as your heartbeat and your blood flow, when you consent to understanding your emotional state, when we consent to understanding and admitting to our emotional state, our bodies literally start to open up and release. So that's the next step, is relax. So I just want everybody real quick to just do a quick scan, just in your comfortable seat, just from the top of your head, starting there, like, what is clenched? Is your brow clenched? You know? What's your cheeks doing? Are your cheekbones restricted? Are your eyes squinting? Is your jaw clenched? Is your tongue stuck up at the roof of your mouth? Like, is there anything unnecessarily engaged? What about your neck? Like, is your neck loose or is it tight? Just shrug your shoulders. Like, take your shoulders up to your ears and then just, like, let them back down. Let them back down. And then start to release your heart space, like, release that. What about your abs? Release, y'all can just let it out. Let your bellies out, and we all got one, it's fine. And what about the place where your back meets the seat? Is that tight? You know, what about the space where the seat is supporting you, your hips, your glutes, your thighs? Release those if they're clenched. Just turn your attention to like your kneecaps and your calves and your shins. Are those things clenched? Is anything hurting? Is anything needing to be released? Is anything crossed that needs to be uncrossed? Anything tapping that needs to be still? What about your feet? The next phase in this letting go is relaxing and telling our bodies to relax. And then the third step in this second movement is respire. Did you know that the breath tells the brain that your body is okay? The breath also tells the brain that the body is in danger. And when we are remembering or are currently experiencing times of stress or negative emotions, our breath starts to tell our brains that we are not okay. And then our brain starts to secrete chemicals that reinforce this narrative, and then we start to feel these sensations in our bodies, which is why our pulse races, which is why our abdominals move. Our gut is like our second brain, and our stomach secretes chemicals of adrenaline and cortisol when we are stressed. So have you ever been so angry and been so wound up and you just can't like come down? That's why we slam doors and snatch stuff and break stuff and like slam on the brakes and, you know, like we that energy that our breath has informed our brain to release has to go somewhere. And so we let it out of our bodies. And sometimes we're violent with ourselves, or we're violent with our things, or we're violent with each other. And that's because that energy that is coursing through us needs to get out. It needs to go somewhere. And so we have to tell ourselves through our breath that we are okay. So I want you to do that right now. Breathe in deeply through your nose. And then breathe in out through your nose. Like you're trying to fog up a mirror. Breathe in deeply through your nose. And then breathe in out through your nose. Now, one more time, breathe in deeply through your nose. Now, breathe out through your mouth. Like you just released some of the energy that was stirred up by your memory just now. And the energy in this room has shifted. Y'all feel that, right? Like the energy in here is calmer. It's like more relaxed. So the third movement is to awaken our understanding. So this is interesting because you move through the first movement. It's all about you, what you feel, what you see, what happened, you know. The second movement is around de-escalating ourselves. Because oftentimes, probably 10% of the time, what we're feeling requires our full, like, strength of response. But the other 90%, we're overreacting or we're underreacting to what needs to happen, right? And so what we just did was exploring our experience to decide what's really going on so that we can adjust our response to what is really happening, right? De-escalating or getting to a calm state and being like, yo, I need to do something. I need to rev up, you know? So the last movement is to awaken our understanding of what's happening outside of us. And this is what we'll do together. Using the five senses, now that we're in a relaxed state, now that we've told our brains with our breath that our bodies are okay, reconnect to the environment around us. What is there to notice about what we smell, taste, feel, see, and hear? What is there to notice about the people who are around us? And so just call it out. Like, what's there to notice about? I just did it. I said, oh, the energy in here is calmer. So come on, call out. What is there to notice? And there's no wrong answers. Less movement. Mm-hmm. Smells good in here, Walter? Good. I'm glad. Awareness. You have a more sense of awareness. What about the space that we're in? What do you notice about the space that we're in? It's full. Mm-hmm. It's inviting. Good. First timer. That's good. That's a good feedback for you to give us. Great. Thank you. What about the people around us? What do you notice about the people who are around you? Quiet. They are quiet. Present. Uh-huh. Open. Transparent. What are you guys feeling right now? Like, what is this? What is the feeling that is contributing to the energy in the room? You feeling like you're thinking deeply? Uh-huh. Good. Kinship inspired by the weirdness. That's wonderful. What else? You're not the only one. Oh, that's good. What else? What else? Come on, y'all. Yeah. And sometimes when we stop and actually give voice to the state that we're in and what we want to let go, we realize that willingness. We observe that willingness and we're like, you know what? This does not serve me to hold on to this and carry this around anymore. I'm ready to be done with this. I'm about ready to let this go. You know, that's what I came to around my memories of those relationships, which I don't even tell those stories anymore. Those stories used to give me such like power to be like, and girl, and let me tell you, you know, it doesn't even give me the same satisfaction. I feel hoarse and haggard after telling those stories. So I just retired them. Like, come on, it's 2017. Okay. So now what I want you to do, this is a perfect time and state to move into the next step, this willingness, this kinship. Reframe your memory of what you initially began this exercise thinking about. How can we re-explain the situation we believe is causing our problem? If this situation is with another person, which it usually is, how would we tell the story from their point of view without judgment? Not like, well, let me tell it from their point of view. I'm irresponsible, and I make bad choices, and I hurt people. Like, don't do that. That's where I start. Well, my mama didn't teach me good manners, so don't do that. But without judgment, in your calm state, how can you reframe the narrative of what happened? How can you explain it from what you understand about the other person's point of view? Can you sense into the emotions, the perspective, the experience of that other person? So like in one sentence or a few words, just call out how you would, one liner that you would give to explain the situation from the other person's point of view. Abandonment. Okay, Kiana. It is a priority for me to take care of myself, and I thank you for helping me do that. That's good. That's good. So if you were to give voice to the other person's perspective, what would you say? Like, in my situation, I would say, I think that they just did the best they could with what they had, which wasn't much. They tried. Hurt people will hurt others. And so you might have been in a crossfire, but it may not have been aimed at you, right? Okay. That's good. That's good work, Victor. Okay, one more, come on. They might have been forced to do what they did. Mm-hmm. That's good, Michael. Come on, one more, y'all. This is so good. I didn't realize what you did. Wow. And so that's good. So reframing the narrative does not let the person off the hook for what they did now. It does not provide an excuse, but it provides 360-degree understanding for us to be able to move forward. Okay? It does not say what you did was okay and you can do it again. It says, I understand the conditions that led up to your decision making, and I understand also that it wasn't all about me. So I can release some of the rejection and release some of the pain and release some of the hurt that I absorbed when I thought that it was directed at me, exactly about me, and because of me, right? And then lastly, presence. What are we more aware of through this process? Like, in a word, what are you more, Cameron, you said awareness was something that you experienced. What are you now more aware of just going through this process one time with one situation? Letting go of what is left to let go of opened up so much space. And girl, I'm so glad you letting go, because I'm so glad you asked. It's popping. It's popping. It's busting. We need some more games. Yeah. Come on. What are you more aware of through this process one time? I can control me. I can't control you, but I can control me. And I can let go of what doesn't serve me. What else? How much weight? And then the weight that we give something, we give it to that thing, and then we carry it. We drag it. Oh, no. A lady named Miss Ellis said that unforgiveness is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. I think that's Maya Angelou's quote, too. But harboring unforgiveness is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. It has no effect. Bitterness has no effect on the object. Right? And so I want to invite you to experience this process in your own time. You know, whenever you feel something coming up, get present to what just happened, what you feel, or what memory is surfacing. See it, say it, sense it, stay with it, don't back off of it. Give yourself permission to relax. Give yourself permission to breathe. That's what respire means. Reconnect to the environment around you. Reframe the narrative from the perspective of the person involved. And then announce what you're now aware of and present to. And y'all, we can do this over and over again throughout the day. You can go to the car real quick. You can be like, oh, you said what? Excuse me. Okay, where my sheet at? Okay. Turn the car on. Okay. Oh, see it. I can 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 see it. I can. You know? For real, though, this is the difference between going off and keeping your cool, though. This is the difference between keeping your, what'd you say?
Workbook.
Okay, it's coming. But this is the difference between having a relationship with your spouse that is a cyclical drama of conflict and arguing, and the difference between that and having a conversation that's just talking about what you're talking about. And that's it. I'm developing a workbook that has a bunch of tools for letting go, and it's coming out soon. Y'all think this should be in it? Okay, let's read this together. Ready, go. So what do you think? With God on our side like this, how can we lose? If God didn't hesitate to put everything on the line for us, embracing our condition and exposing himself to the worst by sending his own son, is there anything else he wouldn't gladly and freely do for us? These experiences are integral to our development and growth, because as we experience our own pain, let it go, and then the freedom that's on the other side of it, we are now models and examples that can beckon others to freedom. And it looks so authentic for every different person that only you can beckon folks to the freedom that only you have worked so hard to attain. This is the abundant life that the scriptures promise. This is the coming to Jesus, all who are heavy burdened, and giving our burdens to him, and then taking his yoke, because his yoke is light. Like, this is the work that those scriptures are commanding us to do. And what happens when we let, y'all, what happens when we let go of the experiences and the emotions that are these false senses of power and control? When we let go of the false power and control, we embrace the real power. And we let go of the need for control because we understand that we are healed. And then life becomes this adventure, and we begin to expect the painful experience to yield a passionate, promising possibility. We begin to expect that, and then we get to it faster and faster and faster every time. We go through these little steps. We go through them like breathing in our minds. Like, okay, let me, bing, I'm done with that. Come on, let's. What's next? What's next, world? And every level, I know, think, next, process that, bring it on. But every level of emotional growth, and every level of professional growth that is a result of our emotional growth, and every level of abundance, and every level of capacity increasing that happens with our emotional and professional growth, everybody around us is now able to see what is possible, even from the darkest, loneliest, most horrible stories of rejection, what is possible. Those stories don't define you. Those stories don't measure your value. Those stories do not dictate for you how far you can go. Those stories, your genealogy does not make you defective. Your genetic makeup does not make you defective. Your capacity to lead and your capacity to inspire and grow is the worse your story, the higher your capacity, you know? The more you've been through, the more God has for you. I mean, it seems like the more we embrace our pain and move through it, not stay in it, but move through it, the more abundant promise is on the other side of it. And I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, because we got some folks in here right now who are moving through the abundance that their pain has produced. But there's more work for you to do, Tasha. There's more work for you to do, Farrell. There's more work for you to do, Keisha. There's more work for you to do, even in your spaces of abundance. And there's more work for you to do. There's more for you to create. There's more. Oh, my gosh, y'all. And it's from the future. Look at them glasses. The glasses are from the future. They on back order. They so from the future. But there's more work for us to do and more beauty for us to have. So that's it. This is the offering moment. I want to invite you guys to give. But like, and like for those of you guys who are here for the first time, like, man, like, we are a vocational incubator. Like, we are a space where, like, you can take a passion of yours and come here and get equipped and get that spiritual urge confirmed, but then, like, develop some specific steps towards your destiny and specific steps toward the person that you already are. We just need to, like, take off some stuff to truly step into it, you know? And so I want to invite you guys to give. Those of you all who are members, we invite you to allocate 10% of your abundance towards what's happening and what we have going forward. Those of you who are here with us for the first time, if this is your first date or your second or third date, you know, give what you think the date was worth. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, if you like the date, then, you know, give what you feel like. Let your dollars communicate how you felt about your experience in terms of supporting what's happening next. So as our artists in residence come back to give us a little reprise, I just want to invite you guys to really take this symbol home. And if you want me to email it to you, come let me know, because I can send you like a PDF version of this. And it's actually in the back of a workbook that I have as well. I just kind of reworked it a little bit, so I can send you the original too if you want like the original. But yeah, this is the offering moment. We welcome you to give. We also welcome you to, beyond a financial offering, offer the experience that you just spent time processing. And what if today is the last day that you speak about that experience as a victim? Like, what if you retire the narrative as a victim of the experience and only return to it as a victor? Return to it as someone whose muscles and bones are stronger because of the break. Right? So offer the position in the story as a victim and embrace a new role in the story as someone who is victorious, who is not thrilled that it happened, but who is going to use every ounce of energy to become greater and better and stronger and faster and wiser, so that you no longer need to tell that story to give yourself any kind of power or confirmation about how bad the world is. This story is now evidence of how much God loves you. So the moment is now.